Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo. We bring you hand-selected hosts, podcasts, and talk radio programming with listening options, 24/7 streaming, or listen on demand. We also feature one-on-one segments with important guests, people who have something to say that you need to hear. And if you have something to say and would like to be featured on the network, please visit speakuptalkradio.com for all of the details or contact us at pr@speakuptalkradio.com. Well, today I have the pleasure of reintroducing you to an author whom I interviewed last year. He is Jeff W. Horton. Jeff was an information technology professional for 25 years before deciding to pursue his lifelong dream of being a writer. Since becoming an author and screenwriter of family-friendly fiction, Jeff has written 2 screenplays and 8 published novels in several genres, including apocalyptic fiction, science fiction, religious fantasy, and romance thrillers. His current list of works include Heaven's Oasis, New Beginnings, Frontiers, Cyberspace, The Way of Nacor, The Last Prophet, The Dark Age, and The Great Collapse. And when he's not penning his next novel, Jeff enjoys spending time with his family, going to church, and reading. And he is a member of the North Carolina Writers Network. And I'm interested to find out what he's been up to, so let's bring him on. Welcome back to the network, Jeff.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me.
Oh my gosh, it's such a pleasure. I remember we had a great time talking last time, and so I'm very excited to have you back and to find out what you've been working on this past year.
Well, I've had a chance to write my first romance thriller, Heaven's Oasis, which came out a few months ago, and it's been doing pretty well. I got a 5-star review from Reader's Favorite, and so it's been doing quite well.
And I see on your website, which, by the way, is that a new website?
Yeah, it actually is. Yeah, I moved it over from I was on Weebly and I moved it over to WordPress and redesigned it.
It's amazing. It's very, very rich. Did you do that yourself?
I did, yeah.
Oh my gosh, you should be a web designer. It's beautiful, absolutely beautiful. Seriously, let's give folks that website right up front. What is it?
Yeah, it's Horton Library, www.hortonlibrary.com.
And I love the name, Horton Library. It's just a very classy website. I was seriously impressed, so I wanted to compliment you on that. And I see that you did a re-release of The Great Collapse, and we talked about that at length last time. Tell us a bit about that.
So I moved that novel over from the old publisher over to Willacastle, and I'm excited to have all my novels under one roof now, and so that's been kind of an exciting move. Mm-hmm. And so now I had originally published The Great Collapse under a different publisher, and then I came in and published the sequel, The Dark Age, under Willacastle, and all my subsequent novels as well. Mm-hmm. So now they're all under one roof, and I've got, as I mentioned, the Heaven's Oasis came out here recently, and I'm currently working on my 9th novel, which is going to be a novel kind of along the lines of a 1984 or a Aldous Huxley Brave New World. Mm-hmm. kind of a dystopian political commentary blend, kind of excited about see how that's going to turn out. I'm about halfway through the first draft. I've also got another exciting development. Glover Zone DL Pictures, a small production studio out in California, is looking at actually turning one of my novels, Cyberspace, which I've written a screenplay for, into a film. They're going to start doing some work on it, looks like maybe next year. So we'll see how that progresses.
I saw that on your website under films. Wow, that's exciting.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, they're actually, if it all goes well, they're actually looking at doing all 3 novels in the series, Frontiers and New Beginnings as well. So it'll be not just 1, but 3. So we'll see. I mean, you know, there's a lot. Hollywood's an interesting entity all in itself. Mm-hmm. We'll have to wait and see how that pans out. But it looks promising. I had a call from him last night. He's going to be working on getting the contracts over for me to look at. So.
Well, I could say I knew you when.
Yeah.
Well, hey, you're heading in the right direction there. Not many people could say that they've had this opportunity just to get this far. So, yes, keep us posted.
Yep, good stuff.
All right, we'll keep our fingers crossed. Well, let's talk about your latest novel. You say it's a romance thriller, and this is your first romance thriller, Heaven's Oasis?
Yeah, it really is. All my novels have a some element, you know, of that in it. Not quite as much as this. I mean, this is really the underlying theme of the novel. All of my novels have a blend of Christian fiction and contemporary fiction. You know, what I'm trying to do is to create, you know, really good quality fiction that has a strong element of Christian fiction blended with, you know, contemporary, something that would really be interesting to more than just a Christian audience, but would have an appeal to a much wider audience. Whereas so many films coming out of Hollywood and novels and books and writing literature now has so much of a secular underpinning or worldview that it comes out of. My novels would come out more out of a Christian world. So I've been working, you know, on that pretty much from day one with my first novel, The Great Collapse, and continued that with Heaven's Oasis. And the premise of the story is about a man named Kevin Foster. He meets a young woman named Claire at a young age. They meet on summer break before they go to college. They're going to the same school, UNC Chapel Hill. They fall in love, and then they split up for several years. They have a very intense relationship, and they're not really ready for intensity. So they split, and then they come back together, and it's they pick right up where they left off. And she becomes an archaeologist, and he becomes a history professor. And she is out pursuing kind of a biblical archaeology, where she's out, you know, looking for archaeological evidence that supports things from the Bible, events and people and places, you know, from the Bible. And she's on the verge of a really big discovery on the night, you know, about the time that they end up getting married. They go on their honeymoon, and she dies. And Kevin, of course, is extremely distraught. She was his soulmate. And while he's recovering from his loss, there's an interview from one of her peers, an archaeologist from the university where she worked at, where she's kind of mocked and ridiculed for some of her work. She was basically out trying to prove that God exists, and it was kind of pseudo-archaeology, and it basically was really just kind of mocking the work that she's doing. And Kevin, her husband, becomes determined to do everything in his power to prove that what she was working on was legitimate, was valid. She was on the verge of a big discovery, so Kevin decides to continue her work and to honor her memory and, you know, to honor the special relationship they had. So out of dedication and love and honor and respect for his wife, he picks up in a completely different field than what he has experience in and, you know, takes off to the Middle East and picks up where she left off. And, you know, a series of adventures. And, of course, he does everything in his power and ends up proving that she was right. And he completes her work, and it was kind of a touching novel. It talks about a lot more than just action, and talks more about dedication, commitment, love, sacrifice.
Your characters, were they in any previous novels, or are they new people?
No, they're all brand new.
Okay. So you talked at the top about your blend of Christian and contemporary fiction. So this is who you are, and the whole idea of writing family-friendly fiction is what you're all about.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, I grew so frustrated, you know, I have four children, and how many times I've had to tell my kids to close their eyes or, you know, how to change the channel, turn off the television because of something that came on, inappropriate, I didn't know was in there or...
Right.
You know, it's just it's so much of that on television, and sometimes I'd have to screen what material was going to be in there. It's just so much of it, so pervasive in our culture, you know, these days that I wanted to try. It's like all of the paranormal material that has hit the market over the last couple of decades. You know, Anne Rice was big, you know, back in the 80s and 90s, and then since then, Twilight and... So I wanted to try to offer something that hey, you know, God is all about it. God is paranormal, is super, you know, supernatural. I thought, you know, and I wrote, you know, some of my books embrace that. The Last Prophet is an example. It is based on the Book of Revelation and talks a lot about some of the supernatural aspects of God. So, yeah, I wanted to write something that was... But I wanted to make sure, right, that the work that I'm doing is not just, it's not really inspirational Christian. I mean, certainly there are elements of that to it. But I try to make it more entertainment, mm-hmm. you know, an entertainment that people might want to go to the theater to see. Mm-hmm. They might want to pick up a book and read because it's entertaining, you know, because it's engaging, you know, not just because it's inspiring.
Right.
And so I wanted to offer, you know, an alternative to the Harry Potters and the Twilights of the world.
Right.
And, you know, try to give people, you know, something that, you know, Ted Dekker is kind of an example of that. He's a Christian author. He wrote fiction, a novel called Blink.
Mm-hmm.
And Blink was a really good example of the kind of writing that I like to do. It was a very much a fiction novel, a very engaging, very exciting, a great plot line. It comes out of a Christian, you know, background, but it wasn't preachy. It wasn't really even inspirational, but it was engaging. But it definitely had a Christian worldview to it.
So as you're writing, you're not thinking about my audience, and I want to get this point across. It's just coming from who you are and making itself apparent through your characters. So let's talk a bit about your characters, where they come from, how you develop them, and if you ever struggle between what you would like for something to happen to the character or does that make sense to the plot? Let's just talk about characters for a bit.
Oh, yeah, you know, definitely. I mean, as I talk to more and more writers, I think it's probably fairly common that as we write, the characters kind of take on their own persona. And it's almost like they kind of, we're Frankenstein. They kind of take off and do their own thing, and we kind of lose control of our creations. And so definitely at times... Our characters kind of take off in a direction we never really intended. And, you know, I mean, and you don't really, I'm not sure you're even able, really, to change that, but so much. You have to kind of stay true, you know, to who that character is, and however it shapes up and whatever it becomes. So there are times, you know, when maybe a character is maybe darker than I would like them to be, or maybe not dark enough. And I may try to shape it up here or there. There was one character in the Dark Age. It's a post-apocalyptic world. There's a band of roving barbarian-type people called Urbas that are running around brutalizing everyone else. And the leader is a really vicious guy named Kraken. And he was, you know, very much a... You know, he was kind of... brutal growing up and treated kind of desperately. So he's just really kind of a very brutal individual. There were times I had in his character, I had to soften and I had to, you know, try to soften his edges, give him a sympathetic edge so people could relate to him. Otherwise, you know, there was no way anyone could relate to him.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had to give him his background. You know, I had to kind of give him a background as to what made him as cruel and as vicious as he was. There was a reason why. You know, he had a, you know, very difficult background, the way his parents were killed and the way he was raised on his own, you know, around vicious people trying to kill him. And so, anyway, it was, so you find that you try to shape, and sometimes characters don't always go the way you want them to. But, in terms of where they come from, that's always a difficult question to answer. You know, sometimes I guess it's who we are or people we know. Sometimes it's people we'd like to be or the way we'd like the world to be, you know.
Right. Kind of a composite.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I had one reviewer who reviewed Heaven's Oasis gave me really very, very kind review and gave me an award, you know, for the novel. Very kind. You know, he was commenting about how I must have a lot of the qualities that this guy has. And while, you know, I appreciate that, and I suppose maybe I have a few. Certainly, it's probably more how I'd like to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe more so than how I truly am. You know, a really stand-up person. You know, does the right thing, goes above and beyond for love and honor and respect, and things are really important.
Think of what a learning experience that is for you, though. When someone makes that kind of a comment, it causes you to stop and reflect. Where did this come from, and who am I, and what is it that I would like to be or have others believe I am? It just opens up a whole dialogue within yourself, I would imagine.
Yeah, it's definitely an opportunity for self-reflection.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you pull these characters from? Where did I pull that? Where did I pull that really evil, wicked, freaking character from? You know, where did I get him from? You know,
yeah.
Maybe that comes from some of the darker nature, that we all have, or maybe that's just comes from the composite, from the cruelty that we see around us, you know, all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know, and I'm not sure that many of us can really answer those questions completely. Probably a mix of all the above.
Mm-hmm. No, I think you're absolutely right. However, I really do think it's a valid question, just on a personal basis, to get you to start thinking about some of those potential answers. Now, you talked about how in Heaven's Oasis she was doing archaeological research. Do you have a background in that, or did that cause you then to start to do a lot of research?
Well, you know, I have an interest in it. I wouldn't say that I have a background. I watch a lot of programs, you know, Discovery Channel type things on Netflix. I was watching one the other day where they go through some exhaustive research on, I can't remember right now what this one particular show was about, but it was basically, I think it was based on Exodus, and there was, I've listened to guys like Dr. Paul Myers. He was a Lutheran professor, and he's done a lot of painstaking research. He wrote some novels like Flames of Rome and, various novels about the time around the Christians and the burning of Rome and Nero. And yeah, you know, in terms of having a real background, and not really. I did do some research, and I always do, you know, for my novels.
Mm-hmm.
And I was looking at things like evidence for, you know, Pontius Pilate and the bone box and the Caiaphas's bone box that they discovered. And it's fascinating, really. Some decade, not so long ago, a few decades, back in the 70s and 80s, there was a lot of, you know, that King David of Israel never really existed. He was just a composite figure that, you know, Israel made up. But then they found out that, you know, there really was.
Mm-hmm.
And time and time again, the archaeological record has proven, you know, that a lot of the events in the Bible has actually happened. And so I think there's a lot of... there's more evidence to support some of the suppositions I make in the novel than there are against it.
Right, right. And you've written so many and so deeply. Let's talk about you as a writer, and maybe as a way to help some of the folks who are listening who are also writers. What sort of challenges have you faced over the years, and maybe offer some insights that you can share to potential authors?
The most challenging thing I had to face when I really got into this was I think a lot of us enter the writing endeavor with some rose-colored lenses. You know, we kind of think that, you know, man, if I get published and I get a few novels, I am going to be just really successful, and that's just, I've really arrived, you know. And as I've been doing this for a while, I come to find out that's not really the case. And truly, the truth be known, it never really has been. Even back when Herman Melville wrote Moby Dick, a lot of people may not know this, but it really was, it was kind of a flop when it came out. Melville had to go back to working a regular job. He didn't make enough money to, you know, to live on with Moby Dick. It wasn't, I think, until after his death that it actually took off and started doing really well. So, you know, that unfortunately is sometimes the way it goes. And even the experts like literary agent Donald Mass, the Mass Literary Agency out of New York, in his novel, Writing the Breakout Novel, I'm sorry, not his novel, his book, Writing the Breakout Novel, kind of chronicling the whole process, he states that, you know, no one really knows for sure the difference between a breakout novel and one that is what they call a mid-lister, one that never really makes it out. And, you know, I think he kind of concludes that probably the best he could come up with was word of mouth, you know, getting it out there and word of mouth. This book is really good. It's the difference. But it's really not, you know, there's no prescription for it. So bottom line is, it takes a lot of patience, and you just don't really know if a book is going to do well or not. And so doing interviews like this and, you know, trying to, you know, network and do promotion has to kind of be a part of it. Or if you, you know, if you're able, you know, hiring somebody else to do it, or if you have a family member, somebody who can help to do the promotion in for you. But you, promoting is something has to be done on a regular basis, I think. But also you have to keep cranking out the writing. Mm-hmm. You can't stop, mm-hmm. you know, so it's a bit of a challenge finding time to do all of that. You know, you can't really do just one or the other. You can't just stop writing and just promote, and you can't just promote and stop writing. You have to kind of do both. So that's probably the biggest challenge, and a lot of folks have trouble finding publishers, and self-publishing is a very valid way to go about it, you know, these days versus maybe, you know, 10 years ago, even 5 years ago, it's much more accepted. But I would advise people, while going with someone like Penguin or Random House, one of the big five, is obviously, you know, is nice and is great name recognition. And, you know, if you can't do that, there's nothing wrong with going with a small press. And I got published by a small press, World Castle. And now World Castle has something like 80 to 100 authors, and they've got, you know, they're growing, you know, like gangbusters. And I've been with them, you know, now for, gosh, 7-8 years. So that's a great way for, you know, authors, if they can find a small press that will work with them. You know, I think that's a good way to go.
Yep. Excellent advice to promote at the same time that you're writing. So there's definitely a balance that has to be created there. And I agree with you. The self-publishing has really brought out people who prior to the boom in self-publishing just thought, well, none of the biggies are going to pick me up, so why bother? But now with the ability to self-publish, I think that's probably why small presses are growing, because there's more people out there writing and there's a lot of quality out there.
Yeah, you know, I got to tell you, one of my pet peeves for the last few years has really been the amount of just horrendous material that comes out of Hollywood. I constantly just shake my head.
Yes.
And Because you're exactly right. I mean, I have read novels that, you know, I've never heard of, never seen anywhere else other than just the fact I happened to come across these novels, and I've read them, and they were very, very good. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, why can't they, all of this great work, this abundance of incredible literary work out here, and they're putting this garbage out in Hollywood? Mm-hmm. I'm flabbergasted that they would be putting out the kind of work that they're putting out when there's such great material being written every single day by authors all over this country, all over the world.
No, I agree with you. I think maybe it's that there's so much money behind it and the promotion of it. But let's stick with you because I'm excited to find out what's next. You said you're currently working on your next book, so just give us a little peek into that.
Yeah, so the title, at least right now, is going to be Future Schism. Mm-hmm. And with all the division in our country and politics over the last 10, 20 years especially, the culture war that we've heard that term batted around, liberals and conservatives, you know, I've kidded around from time to time and said maybe it'd just be good if all conservatives went one way and all liberals went the other one and just kind of did their own thing and had their own country. We'll see which one works out. Well, in my novel, I kind of take that to its logical conclusion and assume that at some point in the future that actually happens and people finally get fed up. And so all the liberals go to the West Coast and the conservatives gather on the East Coast. And there's what's called a Great Schism, which is kind of a second civil war where and they split and we end up with two separate, you know, provinces or two different countries. Well, there was one, and they're called the Red Zone and the Blue Zone. Red, of course, is for the conservative, and blue is for the liberal. And they're both different, and the story actually takes place, you know, several decades after this Great Schism. And both of these experiments are failing. And miserably, both have lapsed into totalitarian regimes of one sort or another. And they're failing for different reasons, but yet the same reason, you know, the yes. Human nature. And the point, and I like a lot of the thrust of the novel, is that while we argue and bicker constantly, we kind of need each other. Mm-hmm. And to kind of balance each other out, because if we don't, we go too far one way or the other. And people need to kind of realize that. And so that's kind of the thrust of this novel. And of course, in the midst of it, you know, there's an element of tragedy, as sometimes I'm introducing a little bit more in some of my novels. But there's also a great message and a story of rebirth, hope, comes out of the end of it.
Wow, Future Schism, that's an exciting premise. I look forward to that.
Thank you. Yeah, I think if I can pull it off, I think it may be really, really exciting.
If anyone can pull it off, you can.
Thanks.
You're welcome. All right, well, as we begin to wrap up, is there anything, though, that we missed that you would like to talk about today?
I think it would just be, you know, people, I'd love to have folks come out and, you know, they can follow my... I got a blog on my website. Mm-hmm. Love to have them come out and follow the blog. And of course, when things get posted out there, I have pretty active on Facebook, and just easy to find me on Facebook. You know, Jeff Horton, author, or they can find links to it off of the Horton Library. And would just love for folks to take a look. I think they might be pleasantly surprised. If they like love stories, I'd love for them to take a look at Heaven's Oasis. I think they might be pleasantly surprised.
They will be pleasantly surprised. Heaven's Oasis. And your website is HortonLibrary.com. What a pleasure to reintroduce you to everyone again. And it's been a pleasure for me to talk with you. I always enjoy this. And I'm looking forward to your next book very, very much. So I appreciate your being with us today. Thank you.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's been great. Thanks.